Oh, cool.
Hi there.
Hi, Ellen. It's the three of us, Dan, you, and I, so far.
Okay. Well, I got a message from Randy that at first he thought he wasn't. Oh, good. There you go.
Randy, you left a message that said you would be here.
Oh, I did?
No.
Yeah, I left a message with Helen, yes.
Well, she started to give you a message saying you might not be here, I think.
But, oh, no, I was going to say that I never got finished, that at first he thought he couldn't be here, but now he is going to be here.
Oh, I feel very honored. And Jennifer?
Yes.
Yes, hi. And who does, and Magnus? Not as yet. Did you all get readings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. How did you all like that new style? We just worked on that. Stephanie spent quite a bit of time putting that together, program to do that.
Oh, where they printed out the cards?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Yeah, it looked good.
Yeah. Yeah, she had to scan every card and edit every card into the computer.
Oh, my goodness.
So and then build a program to, you know, put them together, like.
Sounds like Stephanie knows her computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, there was really wonderful clarity.
Yeah, that's what we thought. We tried photographing them. That wasn't as clear as scanning them.
Uh-huh.
So you all ready to bless? Everyone ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Has Magnus come in yet?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're
magnificent. Okay, let's bless together. One, two, three.
Child
of wonder.
Child of flame.
Nourish our spirits and protect our aim.
Also, I made a decision as sort of a favor to you guys. I hope it works for you to slow the course down a couple of weeks because generally we go 1 week per type of card. Oh, what would you call it? You know, Celtic cross, 12 card, and so forth. And I realized that even though that's where we've always done it, that you all might enjoy taking an extra week on each. So instead, we're doing 2 weeks on Celtic cross and 2 weeks on 12 card.
That's fine. Give us a chance to find some willing participants.
Well, and also to get, yes, that is correct, and to get a feel for it. Now, do remember that you don't have to do it with a person present.
Oh.
I mean, that's better. You'll actually, it's amazing, but you'll find out that you'll actually do better if you have someone there to do the reading for. For one, you can ask some questions.
Yes.
Because with these kinds of readings, sometimes you need a little background. For instance, Magnus, did you look at your reading?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so I did too, and I need to ask you a bunch of questions to be able to do that reading because it's really hard to tell what the reference is in some cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm sure you'll be able to help me with that. And that's fine with this kind of reading because it's not fortune telling. So the idea is not to dazzle people, but to work with people to come up with an understanding of what their path looks like and what, if any, changes they might wish to make it better. So there's no problem at all in sort of doing it like a cooperative effort with a person. So with in willingness, how did that help with moving as we are into a whole new topic, so to speak, of the tarot? Dan?
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. I had the wrong button the wrong way. It was strange that when I was actually doing the greetings and the endings, I didn't sense anything. But I've had some revelations this week about some other things. So I don't know if it was, I don't know what correlation there was with that.
Anything that you could tell us about the nature of the revelations that might help us to ascertain if there is a correlation?
Yeah. Something that I have, that you have said ever since the beginning of this course, and I have read it in some other books and other places, and it kind of like putting the card on the plate, it kind of windowed for me this morning. And that was the thing that Aleister Crowley said about nothing, there is nothing but will over intellect.
Will under intellect.
Will under intellect, yeah.
Right.
And that...
Actually, what he said, so that we're clear, is do what thou wilt. That shall be the whole of the law. And then colon, will under intellect.
Okay. Well, that just all of a sudden just opened up a whole new universe for me today.
Mm-hmm. And what did that tell you?
Well, it just, I took it as defining the purpose of why I'm here and what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. So you're, tell me if I'm right or not so. Are you saying that up till now your life has sort of been, a bunch of cause and effect chains, so to speak, that this step leads to that step leads to that step and so forth, and, you know, it all kind of makes sense in terms of how society operates and so forth and what you see around you. And then when you look at this kind of a thing of will under intellect, that it makes it sort of more as though there are some overall principles that exist for us. And when we start to say, overview our lives into that, if you want to call it master plan, so to speak, it has a different look to it or feel to it. Am I describing anything at all? Or?
Yeah, that's a lot of that's accurate. What it really did or came home to me on this was the balance between the spiritual nature and, or spiritual life or whatever, and the mundane, everyday surviving in the world.
Okay, and what would you say about that balance, if anything has come about that yet? Or?
Well, up until now, I had those two things were separate.
Okay.
And now I realize that the spiritual should not overshadow or be taken to be greater or something like that than the mundane, because the mundane is important, and so it shouldn't be, you know, overdo it, but yet the spiritual should be an influence on directing the mundane.
Well put. Well put. Another way of saying it, if this appeals to you, is that all cause starts in the spiritual.
Yeah, and I knew that, but it just took on a new freshness and a new dimension for me.
Good. good. Because then what we're doing begins to make more concrete sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, that's beautifully put. Helen, how about you?
Well, I also wasn't aware of any sense of understanding about exactly how willingness was fitting in with my week.
Mm-hmm.
But I there was a lot of this week that was pervaded by a sense of that I was becoming more and more sort of tabula rasa, or less and less of a sense of, you know, who I am, or holding on to any definition of me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's a lot of releasing of emotions. So that was my unwillingness week.
Well, that kind of relates to what Dan is saying, that when our willingness comes, you know, there's so many ways to describe it, but if we said, okay, when our willingness comes from emptiness, you know, from peacefulness, from allowing, it seems to connect with a very different source than what our willingness has to do with what we call force of will.
Right.
And, you know, all of us have a collected collage of who we think we are. And we wear it pretty tightly. And proof of that is how reactive we are when different parts of that are pinched, squeezed, prodded, whatever, by others or even ourselves. And then it seems like you're experiencing a breaking down of the facade,
mm-hmm.
where you're suddenly confronted with perhaps what I have thought I was may not be who I am, which is the intention of our studies. If you recall our talks about cognizant dissonance and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the process.
Yeah.
And it's a very good one. And some of you all are coming to it very quickly, and other core classes, people have gone much into more advanced classes before they've had these kind of discoveries. Well, the advantage of that is that the sooner you get to that place, the more you can take in, the more perceptics you have available as we go on.
Yeah.
And the less rigidity, you know, you've got in belief and so forth, which can be extremely useful.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I haven't been fighting it at all.
Good.
Just kind of watching it.
Yeah. Randy.
Well, my week in willingness. When I would go to say it, I would, and afterwards, I found that I was really questioning where my willingness was.
Okay.
And, you know, where is it? Where would it, is it coming from? And, you know, where is it going? And I was kind of at a block there. You know, because I.
You can't perceive it.
Well, I can perceive my willingness, you know, where it comes from will. I've had a hard time perceiving it, you know, as, well, I can't perceive it as coming from an emptiness.
Okay. That's good. For you, that's good. you understand about willingness coming from will.
Yes. I understand because a lot of times it seems like my mind is more controlled by the whatever wind my will is being directed.
Mm-hmm.
And
so what is it that directs your will?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that directs your will?
Well, probably trying to, obtain comforts of daily living, I guess.
Okay, that's good. So life directs your will.
Yes, but I don't like my life directing my will.
Good for you. Okay, so you're at an impasse.
Yes.
You know that what you have done in the past will not get you beyond where you are. You don't like where you are.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
So then what do you think would be the answer? Because this is basically the proper situation for all of you at this point.
Well,
but to actually admit it and see it is a huge thing, and most people won't. So what's the answer? What's the resolution?
Well, it's difficult because I know when I have trusted my will in the past, it has not produced the desired results.
Correct. You said.
So I can't trust my will, and yet I know I have to do something differently in order to change my future.
Right. Okay. So you're an apprentice in a magical school.
Mm-hmm.
Whose will can you trust?
My teachers.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. It does come down to that.
Because if I have something that you want,
mm-hmm.
the only way that I know that you can get it is to ask me how I got it.
Yes.
And if I say, this is what I did to get it, then you have to do what I did.
I agree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it makes it really very simple. But it's a place that most people would never go. Because we are told by our experiences, oh, no, you can't trust anybody else's will for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that they could manipulate you, coerce you, lead you down dark alleys and all kinds of things. So you see, this is where faith and trust comes in.
Yes. Now, it kind of opens up new and more questions, along the lines of spirituality. And so, because a lot of people trust in the will of God. And what that will of God is that they see, I don't know.
I don't either. So, I mean, that's different. See, trusting in the will of a higher being is a little different than trusting in the will of a being on your level who has walked the path you want to walk.
Oh, that's true.
You know, partly because, you see, you have to then go through this sort of mental gymnastics. If you're going to trust the will of a higher being, you want to start thinking about things such as what's in it for them, what is their program, because there is the primary directive in the universe which says, just like in Star Wars, or Star Trek, whichever one it was, the non-interference directive, that higher level beings cannot interfere in the belief systems or realities of lower level beings unless asked?
Yes.
And so that's the primary law in the universe, which cannot be broken by God or anyone else.
Hmm.
Unless you want to break rules of the road, and God doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Creator doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it brings up some really interesting questions, which we actually address in basic shamanism in one of the next courses coming down the road. About what is the proper relationship between lesser beings and greater beings.
Ah.
But it's interesting the questions that are coming up for you. They're really good ones.
Mm-hmm. I like your point about and if I want to get where, say, your knowledge and understanding and power, then I would need to emulate or follow your footsteps.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, in fact, the whole basis of 12-step work.
Yeah.
So cool.
True.
Good place to be, Randy.
Okay.
Jennifer, how about you?
I guess I was more accepting and of past and more present.
How did that affect you?
Just kind of neutral, I guess.
Okay. So in other words, you found that you had less force of opinion on either side of anything?
Yeah. Or care or whatever.
Right. So how does that make you feel?
Empty.
Empty like a hole in your soul or empty free?
A hole.
That makes you feel like you have a hole in your soul?
Yeah.
Really? Anybody else get that feeling? So something in your belief system perhaps has told you that if you don't have an opinion on something, that you cease to exist?
No, I don't think so. It's like, what else is there?
Well, unless I misunderstand you, generally most people, when they talk about a hole in their soul, it makes them feel like they don't exist. Or there's just, they have no soul, or everything is horribly wrong in their lives, but they can't put a finger on it. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's not wrong, but there's some... it's just neutral.
Well, see, neutral is a whole other thing. If we stop assigning significance to things in our life, neutral is where we end up. But that's also called serenity of beingness. I would never personally call that a hole in my soul. Anybody else have anything they want to add to this?
I'm not sure. Does it feel, Jennifer, like something's missing?
No? Okay.
Does it feel like pain?
It could. It's right on the edge of going that way.
Hmm.
But not really.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel free at the same time?
No.
Does it feel like apathy?
Yeah.
Well, you might consider, did you at any point go out and ask the directions, the winds, and Sky Father and Earth Mother to give you any other perspectives on willingness?
Yeah, I asked for willingness to accept my past, and I got this out of it.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. What does your past mean?
Nothing.
That's right. And it has sort of a feeling of emptiness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, if our past were a device by which we could comprehend the present that we have created and therefore select a future of our choosing, would then the past have some purpose?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what we're going to do. The whole reason we're studying the Tarot is exactly that. Since we've all got a past, but it's, for most of us, our past has abused us. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So now we're going to say we want a different relationship to it. We want to use it as an active tool to determine a different cause and effect chain. And what you all are going to see, not so much with Celtic cross readings that we're going to work on next 2 weeks, but after that, the 12 card readings, you're going to see that a lot of times all they are repeated cycles of cause and effect throughout our lives that repeat over and over and over again with different people and dates and so forth. And seemingly different events, but actually motivatedly the same. And so our link to our history then has a value which it did not before, which is it tells us how we got to the present we got to and what kind of a future probability will bring. And therefore, we have the empowerment in present time to change it. So I would say that was a very good step for you to see that given what you had thought your history was, it didn't give you much purpose, except it sort of blew you around a lot.
And I don't want it again.
Well, right on. So then we use it to plan a different present and future. Cool. Magnus, how about you?
Yes. Other than the fact that this time of this week is a period of full submission and commitment to the magical part of the part I've chosen, there was nothing really that I noticed in the week which kind of draws my attention to the reading.
Other than, that's pretty big, I would say.
I think so, too. Because sometimes you have some, one has some level of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, how do I say it? It's just like going to Rome. You can fly, you can go by sea. So sometimes when you want to decide which way part to choose, it seems you have a kind of conflict. But this week, I kind of look at it like a time of full submission and commitment.
Okay. Well, choice for a lot of people has appeared as conflict because of the fact that we put such significance on what we call mistakes or getting it right and so forth? How about if it didn't matter which way you chose?
Be a lot easier.
Yeah. Would you all like to know how I make all major decisions in my life?
Sure.
Ask Daphne.
Sometimes, but if I need to make it myself, I flip a coin.
You what?
Toss a coin, hit
it. Is that because you're trusting that the coin will turn up in a way for your greatest good, or because it really doesn't much matter?
Well, there's a couple of things. If you actually know the answer that you feel is right for you, but you're not clear on that, as the coin goes in the air, that will come to the surface. You know, if you find yourself praying for heads, does that...
Right. Yeah.
But ultimately, the coin is quicker than the pendulum, okay? And just as accurate, if you trust it. So... It's a good technique, and I used to use the I Ching, which is still coins, unless you want to do yarrow stalks, which I also have done, but they're very slow, and that's good when you want to dwell on something. But the coin oracle is fairly quick, and then, of course, you're dealing with a set of verses, proverbs, what do you want to call it, and you have to interpret them to some extent or understand what they're saying. Which brings up a point in divination, too. Like, the first time I was ever introduced to the I Ching was in 1969 when I moved from New York to Boulder. But our target wasn't Boulder. Actually, we went to Denver because my wife had relatives there. And then we were going on to California. We had no idea where we were going or why. We were sort of fleeing the East Coast, so to speak. And we went to Boulder only because we heard there was a concert in the park on Sunday, and it was Sunday, and we were going on, so we thought we'd do the concert and then go on. Well, as it happened, a month later, we were still in Boulder living at these people's house that sort of adopted us. And someone said one day, well, hey, we've got a workshop on the I Ching. And so we all went to that, and we were introduced to that by the people that opened the sun sign, actually, which some of you guys may know about years ago. That was the forerunner of all the art galleries and co-op and so forth of Boulder. And Green Mountain Granary and all that opened with it. And so they asked, did anybody have a question with the throwing of the I Ching? And I said, yes, I did. So they said, okay, and they let me toss the coins, and then they looked up the verses and so forth. And I don't even remember what the actual, what do you call it? I can't remember the name of those things, the 64 hexagram, what the actual hexagram was. But the changing line was, and what my question was to stay in Boulder and move on. And the changing line was take the axle trees off the wagon. I did not find it very difficult to interpret that.
No.
And we did just that. We took our car apart in the front yard and left it there. And within a week, we found our own home, which she ended up buying some years later, and so on and so on. So but you have to trust. So that brings us to this whole point of the tarot and how to use it. And it also brings us to, well, after in willingness, what would we do after that? I believe it's in seeing. me just check here. Anybody have Look to Heaven song?
Yeah, I did. I don't remember. It's class 22, though, right?
It is in C.
It is in C. Thanks. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Yeah, it's class 22, and it is in C. It is in C, which is useful for the tarot. Okay, so, and there is a video clip on the Celtic cross. There's also a video clip on what to do if somebody's pushing on the reading, and it shows up by affecting the candles. But I'll talk about that too. But before I rush into this, did anybody have any questions on cards that didn't key or wouldn't key, or window, I mean, or anything about the process or how to shuffle or anything at all like that? Dan, did you have any questions?
No, sir, I don't.
Your process is coming along okay?
Yeah, it's just fine.
Are you close to being done?
Yeah. Well, I've actually finished.
Okay, so you know then to go ahead and shuffle 50 times?
Yeah, I have not done that yet.
Yeah, cool. Helen, any questions?
No, no questions.
Okay. Randy?
Well, I had one that came up that I couldn't window, but then when I was going through a time, of course, it was sitting on the side of my in my plate, and I looked at it, and it did window then.
Oh, good.
So.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
That's useful. Sometimes it's just a fresh look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fine. How are you coming?
I have not done my 50 shuffles yet.
Oh, yeah, you're up to that point. That's great. Jennifer.
Oh, I need to shuffle. I have a question. How come we're supposed to put tigers or hawks or... on the Book of Shadows?
Oh, dragons, anything. It's like a protector.
Is it any kind of animal, or you want one?
Any animal that you relate to, that you feel would keep curiosity seekers or people that have no right to be in your Book of Shadows away. I like warthogs myself, or dragons. But anything that you feel is, you know, sort of fierce and protective and would work with you. And you can, you know, you can cut out a picture from somewhere, take a picture, any way you want to do it. They're symbols. Magnus?
I don't have any question right now.
Have you started your keying?
Yes, I have.
How's it going?
It's going fine. Only the little problem I had is sometimes, that's why I have not finished all of them. How are we doing it and suddenly I would be out of the present, out of the moment?
Okay.
I would just stop and pack up everything.
Sure. In other words, you lose your focus?
Yes.
Right. That's okay.
So I'm still trying to make every key worth it and to try to rush it over.
Right. No, that's fine. That's just fine. You don't have to be like me when I did this the first time around. Believe it or not, I keyed my deck all in one sitting, but think about where I did it. Well, of course, those of you who live in Boulder only can relate to this if you've been in Boulder for a while, but anybody, Randy or Helen, remember a place called Jose Muldoon's?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I've never been there, but I knew where it was.
Yeah, well, I started going there when they first opened, and I considered it my office, the bar. So I took in my candles and everything in my plate, and I sat there in Jose Muldoon's by the window and in the bar and keyed my whole deck one evening.
Wow. Were people curious?
if so, they didn't. I don't think so. You know, when people are drinking, they just don't.
That's true.
Have much attention, you know. In Boulder, what the heck? I mean, shoot. People do weird things in Boulder anyway, so.
That's right.
No, I don't. If anybody was curious, they didn't say anything. The barmaids may have been, but they were too busy to probably care that much. And, but I'm not recommending that. That's the way I used to be. Okay, so Celtic cross, also called the Gnostic cross, is a very useful reading when you want a character sketch of a person. It's generally designated for people, animals, or beings. It's not for things so much, like businesses and so forth. You could do it on a corporation, like an entity body, if you wanted to. But 12-card readings work better. It's like a photograph or a stop-action picture of a person. It doesn't give you cause-effect change so much, but it gives you relationships. And so it's a good way to find out how a person is doing in their life right now in a moment. So stop the clock and take a look. And of course, as we've said, once you finish keying your cards, put your deck back into random by the shuffling process, and don't put it back into natural order again unless you have to, because the random process is what connects it to synchronicity. And when you take it out of random, then that's why we shuffle it so many times, because it kind of builds in that whole synchronicity factor where it can tie in to segments of the universe and so forth. And then we've also talked about choosing a signifier, and those new sheets went out, which you all should all have, about the sun signs and so forth. Generally, it's better if you can find out a person's sun sign, but if you cannot, you can sort of just get an elemental hit off the person if you know them, and use that element as their signifier using the proper age card, of course. Now, there's another way to use the signifiers if you want to look at a person in terms of, say, the emotional side of them. You just want to know about that. You want to study that. You could, even if they were a Gemini, which would be an air sign, you could say, well, I want to use the cup signifier. And go ahead, if they were a mature adult woman, and say, okay, instead of using their signifier as the Queen of Wands, I'm going to use it as the Queen of Cups. But then you would specify in the statement about your reading that that's what you want to find out. Whereas in a Celtic cross, there is no question you preface the reading with, because it is what it is. It's just a character sketch, and that's what it's always going to be. You still would use a signifier, of course. And then to do a reading, you want a nice table area that's fairly clear and easy to use, well lit. You want to sit in the south facing north. If you're reading for another person, have them sit across from you in the north. And then you want your key deck, your key plate, your sun candle, and then your wisdom and protection candles. Two either white, sun yellow, or powder blue. And wooden matches work best. And your book of shadows to record the reading. And then a sweetgrass braid is a good idea. Or you can use a smudge stick I like sweet grass because it pretty much gives you a four-element or an earth-level protection, grandmother's protection. And after you light your sun candle, before I set up the reading or anything, I just take the sweet grass and go light it off the sun candle and go clockwise around the table or reading area three times with the smoke. Just gives a nice cleansing of the area. Now, the wisdom and protection candles are very useful for a number of reasons. For one, once lit, they keep you out of the reading and they keep anybody else out of the reading. So the wisdom, the one on the right, keeps the reader out from inputting their own opinions and so forth or bias into the reading. And then the one on the left, protection, keeps everybody else, that who you read for, the person you're reading for, or the thing you're reading for, or anybody else at all that might be present or not present. And one of the ways you can tell when a reading is being pushed on is you light your right candle, and then you take your match over to your left candle and you light it, and then you go back over to your right candle with the match and so forth. And then you sit back and watch your candles. And generally they'll pop up to a medium flame pretty much right away. Now sometimes they'll all of a sudden go back down. That's not too unusual, but they don't go down very far. And then they'll come up to a working flame, a tall flame. That's what you want. But rarely, but occasionally, if someone is actually, or something is pushing on the reading, does not want it to be done, or has an invested interest of some kind, both candles will go down to a dull glow ball and stay there. And if you see that happen, that means somebody's trying to suppress the reading. Just grab both candlesticks in your hands and do what's called a double lemniscate with them, i.e. the left one goes in a figure eight towards the right one goes in a figure eight towards the left one simultaneously, and put them back down. And then they'll pop right back up and everything will clear. In all the years that I've been doing readings, I've only had to do that twice that I can think of. Good to know, though. So, the process for doing the Celtic Cross reading. I ask you all to look at your notes very carefully before you do your first reading. I don't mean hesitate. That's not what I'm talking about. Just get the order pretty well down in your mind of how you're going to do this so you don't leave out a step. That's important. If you have to make yourself a little list on your beside the reading where you're going to record the reading on your Book of Shadows, that's okay too. But there's a certain order to the way things are done. Such as, well, we've already said in the south facing north, you've lit your sun candle, you've smudged if you wish to, and so forth. And then, of course, the next thing you're going to do is, okay, I'm doing a reading for such and such. I write that right in my Book of Shadows, the time, the date, the day of the week. And if it's a Celtic cross, I write Celtic cross. I write the person's name, I think I said, and their sun sign. Sun equals whatever it is. If you know the glyphs, use them. If not, just use the word. The symbol for the sun is a circle with a dot in the center. Okay, now, before you do anything else, because this is a Celtic cross reading, you take in your Book of Shadows that you can use the form that we supply and you can put them in a loose leaf notebook if you want. Or you can use the form and your book of shadows, either way. If you use the book of shadows without using the form, you write down the side of the page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, cover, cross. Just like that. That gives you all the positions you're going to throw. The signifier is already up at the top, determined by the whatever is their sun sign and their age. So you write that in, and then, like I say, down the left margin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, cover, cross, 10 lines. So now you're ready to start. So now I'm going to look for the person signifier. So open my deck, get it out, take off the top and bottom cards that confine it or protect it, put them back in the box, put the box off to the side. And I have my plate there, and I'm going to turn the top card over and put it on the plate. And now is when you make a critical decision at this very point. Do I take a card off the deck and turn it over away from me? Do I take a card off and turn it over towards me? How do I peel the card off the deck and put it down on my plate? However you decide is the way you will do it from now to infinity. So pick away, and that's always the way you do it. I do it away from me. I pick it off and turn it over away from me. Because you always want to be consistent in that. So you start with the top and lay the top card on the plate, and then you go the next one and you're looking for the person. So you hold in your mind, I'm looking for so-and-so, who is the King of Swords, or the Knight of whatever, and you're looking for that card. And you just hold your focus and keep looking for that card, turning them over onto your plate until you find it. If it's very near the bottom, it generally means the person is sort of either hiding or feeling somewhat tenuous about the reading, or a little not sure. If it's right near the top, they're eager and ready to go. If it's in the middle, they're sort of so-so about it. Just gives you sort of an indicator. Always watch. How far down do I have to look for them? And very rarely, you go through the whole deck and you don't find them. And you do it again and then you find them. They're really hiding. It can happen. Not necessarily consciously, but still and all. Okay, so now you find their signifier. Take everything else off your plate but that signifier, put it on your plate, right side up to your viewpoint. Take the rest of that, put it back together, and put it off to the side. Now you look at that card. Not until it windows, which is what your notes say. On item 6, it says, until the card windows. That's not correct. It's until you see the person in the card. The card will not window. It shouldn't window. But you should be see some aspect of the person in the card, i.e. if you related the card to the person, even if you've never seen the person. Yeah, that looks like so-and-so. You have tied the card to the person. That's all you need to do. And then, you do nothing with the card, you light wisdom and protection. That sets it up. And then you put the signifier in the reading. So those are your steps. That's the these are the steps you go through. Find the signifier, tie it to the person, light, wisdom, and protection. Put the signifier in the proper place for the reading, for a occultic cross, pretty much right in the center of the table, between the two candles. Maybe a little to the left of center. Then the next thing you would do, if you're doing the reading and there's no one there that you're doing it for, you shuffle the cards. If you have someone you're doing the reading for, you hand the deck to them and you say the words out loud to them. Please shuffle the cards at least 3 times or until you feel you have a proper mix. And watch them do it. If a person is nervous about the reading, oftentimes they'll jam them and not get a good shuffle. Tell them to relax, take their time, and then they'll get good shuffles. They can shuffle more than 3 times, as many times as they wish to. When they're done, then you say, and with your left hand, divide the deck into 3 stacks, and you might even show with your hand where you want them to put it, like, say, right above or below the signifier, right in the center there, going across towards the 2 candles. 3 stacks. They don't have to be the same in height or anything else. All you need is 3 stacks, but it's with their left hand, not their right hand, it's with their left hand. And you want to change something else in your notes, too, because, let's see, here it is. Oh, yeah. Item 12, page 168 in my book, says, once they are done, ask them to cut the deck into 3 piles with their left or heart hand. That's incorrect. It's their head hand. And place the piles in a row in the reading space in front of you if the person is... And then in number 13, it says, with your right head or intellect hand, that's wrong, that's heart hand. So in other words, they put the stacks down with their head or intellect hand. You pick them up with your heart hand.
Alan, does it matter if the cards, the 3 piles are like left to right or right to left, the way they lay them?
The order that they put them down?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Any way they can manage it.
Okay.
Because, see, what you're going to do is so simple. Then what you do, once they've done that, you take your right hand, which for most people is your output hand, and you put your hand over each stack in any order you want to. It doesn't matter. I generally go from right to left for whatever reason. I don't know. That's just the way I've always done it. And you feel the energy in each stack. So you feel the rightmost stack or one of the stacks, you feel the next stack, you feel the next stack. What you want to do is feel for the hottest, the most energetic, the one that's putting out the most force of those 3 stacks. And that's the first one you pick up. That goes on the top. And then the middle in intensity goes in the middle, and the lowest in intensity goes on the bottom. You all got that? This is very important. Mm-hmm. Now, let me assure you, you will never get it wrong. Even though sometimes you'll look at a reading you throw and say, oh my God, I must have picked up the wrong stack. You cannot pick up the wrong stack. But take your time. Your instincts will tell you. Sometimes, but not very often, I have to feel them twice to make sure. Sometimes they feel very similar. That's when I have to feel them twice. If you need to, you can even push a little energy back down at each stack, which will give you a greater output or backup on your hand. But that's how you tell the order to pick them up. So the most intense on the top, the next going down in intensity in the middle, and then the lowest in intensity on the bottom. And now you've got the deck in your left hand, you've picked it up with your right, you put it into your left, and you're ready to deal. Any questions so far?
Yes, Alan, I have one. When somebody handles the deck doing the shuffling, is there any way that they can put any negative energy or do something funky to your deck?
Not really. No, that's why you've got your candles lit.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
When you said turning the card away, upside down, or anywhere we choose, what exactly do you mean by turning it away?
Okay. If I'm holding the deck in my hand.
Yes.
My left hand, say. And it's up and down in my hand, right? Not side to side. It's vertical to my body position. You're not with me?
I'm kind of confused.
Well, you can turn the deck this way or that way. You can have it so it's laying crosswise to your body. Or you can have it so that it's, if you lay a card on the table, you can lay it either so it's longwise away from you or crosswise the other way, right?
Okay.
Well, when you hold the deck in your hand, you want it so that if you take a card off of it, it is in that longwise position away from you. That's the way you hold the deck. It's very hard to hold it any other way. For humans, horses might be different. Because your hand doesn't go any other way. You still don't follow me. Pick up your deck. Hold it in your hand.
Yes, I'm holding it right now.
Okay. If you look down at it, which way is the long direction of the card?
I'm looking at the emperor. Looking at it like I'm looking at the picture.
Yeah, well, I don't care whether you're looking at the back of the picture.
Okay.
Because you'd be looking at the back, you wouldn't be looking at the picture.
Yeah.
But which way is the deck? Is it long ways away from you, towards you, up and down towards you and away from you, or is it long ways right to left?
Can you read the word or not? Mm-hmm.
Well, if you are looking at the back, you cannot read the word.
Right.
If you turn it over, is it like he's standing or is he lying down?
Magnus, is there a longer and shorter side of the card?
When I turn it over?
No. Whether it's been turned over or not. There's one side of the card that's short, and there's one side of the card that's long.
Yes, it's the long side facing me.
Okay, the long side should be pointing south and north, okay?
Okay.
If you're sitting in the south.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah. All right, yes.
Okay, now, you can take a card off the top by turning it over so that the bottom edge of the card goes up and away from you, or you can turn a card over side to side, or you can turn a card over so that you take the top and turn it back over towards you.
Okay.
Is that true?
I got it, yes. The bottom part then turn away from me or it's towards me.
Right.
Or sideways.
Right. That's how you can decide, I'm going to now turn over a card, okay?
Okay.
What is important and critical is that you always do it the same way. Pick a way and always do it that way. Okay. Otherwise, you'll mess up your readings. Because you see, that's going to That's going to determine whether a card is reverse or right side up, isn't it?
it will.
Right. And so you always use the same system so that you're not controlling which way the card comes up. You're always doing it the same way. And something else, therefore, is controlling how it comes up.
Okay.
Does that answer it for you?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. If you watch the video and watch how Stephanie does it, I think it'll make it real clear.
I've watched it several times, but I really didn't notice, even though it was said. With the explanation now, go back and watch it.
Watch how she deals. That's what we're talking about, dealing off the deck.
Okay.
Yeah. And pick your own way, but always do it that same way. Everybody else clear about that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so now you're ready now to lay your reading. Look at either the ones we sent out or the one in the book, your notes, or whatever. The first thing, you always throw your base cards first. Those are your up and down cards. Okay. You're going to throw the above, below, behind, ahead position base cards first. But it makes no difference what order you throw them in. But you must remember how you did it. So you can go above, below, behind, ahead, above, below, ahead, behind, below, above. Do you all get the point? You can throw it any way you want to. Just whatever comes to your hunch, at that, whatever guides your hand. But you must remember how you did it. So what I do is I throw those four base cards around the signifier, and then I immediately write down by 1, 2, 3, and 4 that I wrote on my book of shadows what I did. 1 was above. 2 was behind. 3 was below. 4 was ahead, if that's what I did. So I write that down right away. I stop and just write that down so I cannot forget. And then I do the columns off to the right, the vertical time column, starting at the bottom with the farther past, and throw that base card, and then the near past base card, then the hopes and fears or near future base card, and then the farther future base card. So now I've got all my base cards on the table. Now I throw my second cards in the same order. That's why you wrote down what the order was for above, below, behind, ahead, or whatever, because you want to second card them exactly the same. If I did above first, I second card above first, and so forth. When you deal your second cards off the deck, it does not basically matter how you take them off. I do it the same way, just because I stay in that habit, but they don't go up and down. They lay across. They're not called cross cards. They're always called second cards. When you talk about a reading, get in the habit. Right now, it's a second card. It's not a cross card. It's not a cover card. It's a second card. You've got a base card and a second card. Second cards are not reversed. They lay sideways. They are just the meaning itself of the card. And then so you throw those first four, second card them, and then second card your time column, starting with the past, near future, far future. And then the last thing you do is throw your cover and your cross on top of the signifier. The cover card goes parallel and just to the right of the signifier, and the cross card looks like a second card, but it's not. It's a cross card. It's the only card in all the throws we ever do that's called a cross card. Questions so far? This is just the procedure. So, again, the steps. You pick a signifier, you key the signifier to the person, you light wisdom and protection, put the signifier on the table, shuffle the deck 3 times or more, or hand it to your person that you're doing the reading for and ask them to shuffle 3 times or more until they feel they have a good mix. And when they're done, or when you're done, either one, then you say, I even sort of say it to myself, and with my left hand, I will now make 3 stacks. Or you say to the person, and with your left hand, make 3 stacks. They do that, or you do that, and then you feel with your right hand over them for the heat or intensity and pick them up. The most intense on the top, the next in the middle, and the next on the bottom. Then you're ready to lay the cards on the table. You can, at that point, take the rest of the deck and put it, or the rest, there is no rest yet. Sorry. When you finish laying the cards on the table, then you put the rest of the deck on the plate. Okay, so then I'm ready to lay the cards. I do the 4 around the signifier first, base cards first, of course. Above, below, ahead, behind, in what order I choose, I write down the order on my book of shadows. And then I do the time column from the bottom up, and then I second card all in the same order, and then cover and cross. That's all there is to laying the reading. Questions, comments, Dan?
When you're doing your base cards around the signifier, you could go above, below, or you could go clockwise or counterclockwise. It wouldn't matter?
Any way you want.
Okay.
Does not matter. I probably never do it the same in 2 readings. I just, whatever comes up at that moment, I do it.
I just want to make sure I have a clue. The base cards go up and down.
Right.
Okay, because in the notes when it says base cards, cards on the bottom,
that means
underneath.
They're underneath the second card.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And in the readings that you all got, because it would be very confusing to actually put the second card half covering the base card.
Yeah.
But that's the way we do it in a reading.
Okay.
We don't do it the way it looks like on your sheet, where the second card is at the bottom of the base card.
Uh-huh.
We actually put the second card laying across the bottom of the base card.
Okay.
So it covers about half of the base card. You can always pick up the second card and look at the base card, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite legal. You can even pick up the base card and look at it if you want to. Put it back in the same position. Okay. So then, the next thing is, okay, so you're going to talk about the reading. You can call it interpreting the reading if you want, or just discussing the reading. There's a number of ways. It doesn't matter how you start. It's totally up to you. You can, if you want, just sort of an overview, start with the cover and the cross, because those are summations of the whole reading, i.e. the cover card, if it is upright. Sometimes the cover card will come up reverse, sometimes upright. When it is upright, and that's the one that you throw down first, right on top of, parallel to the signifier. When it is upright, it is the positive summation of the whole reading. But if it should happen to come up reverse, or upside down, we say, it is the negative summation of the reading. What that means is it's the total summation of all the negative factors or adverse factors in the reading, or the total summation of all the positive factors in the reading. So it sort of gives you an overview or a window into the reading. And then if the cover cross is upright, then the cross card is the negative summation. If the cover card is reverse, meaning it's the negative summation, then in that case, the cross card is the positive summation. So you can start there if you want to, just because, say, it gives you some insight. I don't particularly do that because I like to get more of a whole view of the reading so that when I do the cover and the cross, I have more understanding of what they might represent. But sometimes you look at them and say, oh, I know what that is. And then it's fine to do so. You can start with any of the four around the signifier, the behind, and so forth, any of those, anywhere you want to start. You could start with time column even, although I find that the time column more often supports the ones around the signifier. So let's talk about what those mean. The behind position, the one that is to the left of the signifier, those two cards, the base card and the second card, they represent what the person is walking away from, what they're leaving behind, what they're moving away from. Does not necessarily mean it's a bad thing, but a lot of times it can be, or something, a more limited position, and they're walking towards a more fulfilled position or a more growth position. Sometimes, you know, you'll get a thing where they're walking away from addiction. That's cool, you know. Or walking away from a non-functional relationship. But whatever it is, it's what they're leaving behind, they're shifting away from. The above position is a really important one. Should not be taken lightly. That represents often an unrecognized potential or condition that is affecting the whole reading. The factors in the reading, the factors in the personality or persona of the person you're reading. They may not be aware of it. They may be very useful to become aware of it because it is affecting the reading or the person positively or negatively. It's something that sort of, you could say, in a sense, that the whole reading may hang in the balance determined by how this, the above is dealt with, how those factors are dealt with. The below is the foundation of the reading. It's kind of what is the whole thing built on. The ahead is not the outcome. That's what the person, consciously or unconsciously, expects to happen. Either based on their history, based on their experience, whatever. But it may not be correct. But that's what they would predictably, may not be that they may not even be aware of it exactly, but it's kind of what they would predictably think would happen. You know, people always say, oh, nothing ever good happens to me. That's their viewpoint. If you want to see how virtuous that viewpoint is, compare that to the far future. If they're similar, then that is an effective viewpoint. if they're not similar, then the person is not seeing something in proper light. So any questions on those four positions? Anybody? They pretty clear?
Yeah.
Okay, now your time column, you can read a couple of ways. Okay, so the timeline, the far past, is also your self-image, because the conditions in your history, in your far past, further past, create your self-image. And there's no indication in any of this how far back that is. It's whenever. Just like the behind position, there's no indication of, well, how long ago was I walking away from that? Yesterday, maybe, a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, or last lifetime. You know, it isn't in of itself determined, but oftentimes you can tell by what it's about. The near past, the second set up the timeline from the bottom, is your environment, because the near past sets up the conditions of the environment. It may or may not relate to the below or foundation. If a person has a lot of influence or they are creating their near past and the foundation is less in their actual control or has other principles or factors, they may not match. The near future, called the hopes and fears, is just that, because our hopes and our fears build our near future. And if the base card is upright, did I mention one thing I forgot to mention this time around? Back in the far past, your self-image, if that base card is reversed rather than upright, it indicates that a person is not clear about their self-image. They are giving themselves a wrong hit on their self-image, and that may need to be corrected. And the same with the hopes and fears, the near future. If the base card is reversed, the person is kind of seeing their fears instead of their hopes, which would be the opposite. If the base card is upright, they're seeing their hopes, but then their fears. So kind of gives you a look at how the person is focusing. And then the top of the time column, the outcome or the far future, is if things are not altered or changed, what will the outcome tend to be? So any questions on any of these before we go into an actual reading?
What was the last thing that you said on the outcome card?
Oh. The outcome, it will be the sort of probable outcome that is the reading is indicating unless something is changed. If you change something, you could change the outcome.
Is there a significance to being upright or reversed on that?
Sure. Oftentimes you could say that if the outcome is upright, it's more favorable. If it's reversed, it's going to have more challenges.
Alan?
Yeah.
Can you go back and tell me why about the sideways cards?
Second cards?
Yeah. The second card.
Well, I think that'll get clear when I start doing Helen's readings here in a minute.
Okay.
But see, a base card is the specific condition, whatever the position it's in that you're dealing with. The second card is the window through that, how that's going to actualize. Any other questions? Helen, are you excited to have your reading done?
Yeah, I really am.
Cool. Well, I thought I like to start with the behind position because that sort of gives me a clue as to what the person is moving away from. Sometimes they want to be moving away from. Sometimes they don't want to be moving away from, but they are moving away from. And in this case, as you see, it's a three of wands. That's the base card. It's upright. And the world card is the second card. Okay.
Right.
So that, okay, so if you all had looked or remember the three of wands, it's a path card. It's about ideas and knowledge or plans and so forth. Could be communication even, but it is, in a just simple way of saying it, it's the ideas or the ways that a person is seeing, remember seeing is also an air thing, seeing their path. And because now how is this actualizing through the world level? So obviously what we're talking about here, we're not talking about necessarily the most intimate, private view of something in a person's path. We're talking about how they fit into the world picture. Is that pretty clear to you all?
Yeah.
Anybody not see that? Well, I'm hoping that means you do see it. So that means you're shifting away from or moving away from having a good, clear understanding of or knowledge of your path in terms of how you fit in the world, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And that what that can mean is that the person is simply moving into a period of question or doubt. Simply put. But it sort of gives us a reference. Okay, so what are we moving away from?
Mm-hmm.
And then I like to, particularly in a situation like this, because it sort of furrows one's brow, well, why would I be moving away from that, you know? Mm-hmm. I look at the above next, because I figure maybe that's going to give me some clues. And we see the Hierophant reverse, second card, death.
Okay. Right.
So the Hierophant is issues of mediation, communicating properly, understanding, making understanding, you could say. So if it's reversed, it'd say we're not communicating, we're not creating understanding. We're not creating understanding relative to what? To the death card, to changes in the person's life. This is not the tower, this is death.
Right.
So it's sort of like I'm not mediating my own changes the way I might. That's the factor that's hanging over the situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So then we can drop down to the foundation or below and see, well, what's the foundation that we're standing on this? And we say, okay, well, here's the Seven of Cups. Second card by the moon. That's a fairly powerful position there. So the foundation of this, remember now that the Seven of Cups is what we call distractions. All the goodies in the world. Or anything that steals our focus or our attention, or not even steals it, but
distracts.
It can distract, but it can be like just all the, you know, how we set our priorities. How, it's a value card, don't you see?
Okay.
It's the values that we live with.
Okay.
See, and that's why if it's reversed, and it's often called addiction or distraction, and represent that, because that's when saying that my values are not clear to me.
Okay. But when it's not reversed?
Then it is that the issue here is my values, my priorities, okay?
Okay.
And it's coming through the moon as the second card of how I transform my emotions. how I use the emotions that I'm feeling to transform my life, okay?
Okay.
So now, just so far, what we've got a picture of is that a person is going into a period of some kind of a challenge, some kind of a choice making. And it's about how they can use maintain their priorities and use their emotions to support their life in a positive way. That's the foundation. And about perhaps needing to pay more attention to mediating the changes they're going through. Adjusting, mediating, understanding. Is that clear?
Okay. So when the Hierophant is communicating, that can be just between myself then. I mean, how I communicate to myself, not necessarily.
Yeah, it can be, but it also can be how you're communicating with other people too.
Right.
It could be how you communicate yourself to the world.
Okay.
It could be how you communicate yourself to the class.
Uh-huh.
It's just that whole area of, you know, not only communication, but maintaining that balance between factors and that understanding. But in this case, having intimately to do with the changes you're going through.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then, now we start to compare. Let's compare the ahead to the outcome. Okay, well, the ahead, kind of your sort of psychological take on what could happen is the Queen of Swords reverse.
Uh-huh.
But the outcome is the Page of Cups upright. They seem quite different to me.
Right.
So it's sort of like, in a sense, just what this tells me is that there is confusion here. There's confusion because the seeming outcome that you're holding on to is adverse. But it isn't verified by the near future or the far future.
So that would suggest that my expectations aren't clear.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
Or your assessments, your evaluations, those also are all part of the Hierophant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So the Queen of Swords, reverse, would talk about you're taking wrong action. Some kind of adverse activity or adverse will or something. Or some loss of force. If it's, say, anticipated loss of force, well, what about what? What's the issue that is coming through? Six of Wands. The ideas or the studies or the plans or the communications that win for me, that support my aim. So, I mean, without saying a whole lot more, I think you know what this is looking at.
Possibly, yeah. I think I might. I also, it's coming quick, so I'm trying to take everything in.
Yeah,
I think so.
We can talk about this more, too, you know, either in lab or in private, but I'm just trying to give it sort of a fairly, I do these things kind of generically so that people can understand and yet not get too pointed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the time column, because that might throw some interesting bearing. And well, we've got an upright self-image of the Five of Swords. But that's kind of an interesting self-image. Because it creates a self-image of one who resolves problems and struggles and strife. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And so, and how do they do it? Through huge acts of power. Do you see that that's kind of a situation you sort of set up in your life?
Yes. Yeah, it's a little hard for me to say I said it. Well, I think that's been my response.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we don't set out to do these things, you understand?
I know. I feel like that was my response to situations
exactly.
I was born into.
Exactly. Exactly. It made you a warrior.
Yeah.
It made you fight for the right of the things that you wanted with power and gusto. You know? And, of course, as you've noticed, suddenly you're exhausted.
Yeah.
You can't do it anymore.
Right.
Well, that's what the near future says. That's the environment. Hey, it's the Four of Cups reverse. It says, I can't find any new hope to dwell on. I can't find any new emotion.
Oh, wait, but mine isn't reversed, is it?
Well, let me see.
It looks upright.
All right. It's reversed on my table here, but let me make sure.
No, it's not reversed on here.
Oh, maybe I didn't reverse it.
Where's my book where I wrote it down? Because that'll be right. My yellow book is in on the bed. Let's make sure here.
Okay, yeah.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
The environment, the near past. It would be the four cups. It is upright. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay, so let's turn that around. So it's four cups upright sun. Okay, so it says that actually being the environment is that you are being offered a new option as to your spiritual health. Yeah, well, that makes a difference. That's good.
Yeah. I like that better.
See, now that puts your whole time column upright, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool, because what it says is that you're not without what you need. Your perception may be that you're not having what you need, but the time column says you have what you need. Because if it's second card sun, and it's the Four of Cups, is you're being offered that which is relates to the moon card over here, too, in the base of the reading.
Yeah.
You're being offered what will sustain you and fulfill you, that's what emotions do, as far as maintaining your spiritual health.
Okay.
And then your hopes for the near future says a working, effective relationship, and here is this King of Swords. Now, what would you guess that King of Swords might represent?
I have to rethink, because I spent time with this yesterday, but I thought the bottom card, I reversed them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm kind of a little bit backwards.
Well, that's okay. I mean, just looking at, here is this relationship. I mean, are we talking about that you're suddenly going to meet a guy and fall in love?
No.
Okay.
Although I wouldn't mind that.
No, I mean, that's a memory come at some other point, but it's not part of what this reading is about, don't you?
Right.
Anybody. Who is that King of Swords?
action, fire, control.
I didn't say what. I said who.
Who?
Are you talking about you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hmm. Makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, but, you know, I can't overlook the obvious.
Okay. So just, can you put it, can we look at it again?
Well, you're saying your hopes are a continued working relationship with me.
Oh, okay.
Is that, that is highly mysterious.
So that's the sort of couple card up above.
Right. Right. The base card is the Two of Cups, which is the relationship card.
Right.
It isn't always a love relationship.
Okay.
It can be a love relationship. Even in this case, it can be a love relationship like friends love one another or whatever. It doesn't have to be an intimate, romantic love relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the fire future is really cool. Page of Cups, second card above the page it is. So that says, oh, here we are starting off fresh and new with new emotions, new life, new nourishment, new sustainment through new opportunities of you know, manifesting myself in the world.
Right. Yeah, I love the outcome cards.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
Sure. And you see how different that is from that Queen of Swords reverse? In the...
In head. The viewpoint?
Yeah, right.
The ahead?
In the ahead, right.
Yeah.
So what we haven't discussed, of course, is the cover and the cross.
Right.
But you had another question?
Well, I don't know. I might have to sit with this longer, but I was just curious about the swords. Yeah, let me sit with it more. I don't have to ask it now.
Okay. Oh, you're talking about down at the bottom?
I was just, I don't know, just this thought came into my mind about something about the role of swords in the reading. I don't know why.
Well, it's a good question because obviously what sort of is being indicated here is a person that has sort of been running on the wrong kind of motivations in their life.
Mm-hmm.
They have been sort of living, I don't want to say a survival mode because that isn't quite accurate, but living...
Well, that was certainly my far past.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I wanted to give it a little different look, just survival mode. I would say, you know, having to summon their will to live their life.
Mm-hmm.
That may not necessarily imply survival mode, because survival mode stuff can get pretty seamy. But it would show that a person that is perhaps not yet found their inner light or their inner motivation, and they're sort of living more reactively, you might say.
Okay, yeah, I understand. It hasn't felt like how I've been living in the present.
Well, it's not bad present.
Right. Yeah, so definitely in the past, absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's what I was talking about.
Okay.
But it's a warning, you see, it's a warning because it's saying that you can revert to that at any time, which would mean impulsivity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Compulsivity. Because
mm-hmm.
you're used to saying, I make a decision and then I act on it. Because that's been your mode of, you know, how to live life. And so there is that sort of why it's come up in the reading is to say, okay, just because you've done that before. But wait a minute, the situation and the environment now is not the same. It's a Four of Cups upright front.
Mm-hmm.
You're being offered something. for your spiritual growth. You going to take it, or are you going to turn it down? Okay.
Right.
So then the cover and the cross, I mean, there's so many ways you can read this stuff. I'm just giving you, like I say, a fairly generic picture of it, a plain and simple picture, so you all's readings can be that way too. So our cover is Ace of Discs upright. So the whole reading is about maintaining your healthy movement in the world. Does that make sense?
Okay.
How you're healthy, vivifying, manifesting of yourself in the world.
Okay.
And the summation of the, well, say the negative summation would be, oh, this sort of picture of, you know, you all know what the sort of the negative idea of the lady in the garden might be?
Kind of getting lost in idealism or something?
Yeah, that, or kind of, you know, I just want to sit at home and do nothing.
Uh-huh.
Because that's sort of that's the whole picture of the lady in the garden. I mean, it's sort of a clever thing in a way. I mean, because I don't know if back at that time that was that prevalent or not, but the positive deal on the lady in the garden card is that, you know, it's the woman's or any person who handles their situation so well that everything flourishes.
Right. Yeah, it looks like she's arrived.
Yeah, she sure has. She's got her harp. She's, you know. Her garden is just booming, you know.
Right.
But it's sort of like, in a sense, the negative of that could be like indulgence. Mm-hmm. You know, just sitting around. You know, just.
Or complacency.
Yeah, right. Right, so. So anyway, that's kind of a, remember now that a Celtic cross is a character sketch. It's not a, you know, like, cause and effect. Even though it does dwell some in cause and effect, it's still a pretty nice sketch of what's going on for you. What comments would you like to make, since you were the pig of Guinea in this?
I need still to sit with it. I don't know. It's like a lot of information at once for me to absorb. So,
well, it's nice in a way that a reading like this can give a lot of information.
Yeah. My response to somehow to throw into this kind of thing is there's a very fun aspect of it to me.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that's what I can say with certainty right now, that I want to play with it.
Well, that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sort of induces something in me where about looking at it from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about not seeing it one way that I'm also aware of coming up. And, you know, when you said relationships, like, I don't know. I've never worked with them before, but it's like, why, I don't know, just sort of wanting to look at the swords and their impact, or just relationships between the cards.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's
what I can name. The specific stuff about it is still kind of too much for me to take in quickly. I have to sit with it.
Sure. Anybody else want to come in? Dan?
No, that was very interesting.
Did it make sense to you?
Yes. I could follow it pretty well, I think, for the first time of actually trying to do that.
Mm-hmm. Randy?
I was able to follow. Still confused about the relationship between the base card and the one...
second card, Randy.
Second card.
Okay. You see, in everything I described, I always started with the base card, right?
Okay, and they want to space that's upright.
Yeah, upright or reverse, but it's up and down.
Yes.
Right. And it's under the second card, so to speak. It isn't on your picture.
Oh.
It's in your picture, it's sort of above the second card.
Yes.
Okay.
Above the second card.
Right. But when you actually lay them, you lay the second cards on them.
I see. Okay. Right. Okay.
So the second card is simply how that's going to manifest.
Ah.
It helps in the reading when you would say things like, so how is this in relation to,
Well, yeah, I mean, for instance, we could have talked endlessly about the Two of Cups just being relationships, but it wouldn't help much. That's why I don't like readings that don't have second cards, because, you see, if we just had the Two of Cups there, I wouldn't have known what we were talking about, you know? Okay, so your hope is that you'll have a relationship. Great, you want to meet some guy and fall in love. I wouldn't have any way to know. But when I saw my signifier, I am the King of Swords. That is my signifier.
Uh-huh.
And it looked like me.
You know, I guess one question I have is, but wouldn't the King of Swords, it's the signifiers are so general. It's really like any man.
That's not the way it works.
Okay.
Remember, key cards change every reading. They don't look the same.
Oh, I see what you mean. All right.
In other words, that's why we don't study the symbols on the cards.
Okay.
Because they change.
Okay.
And the appearances change. And in some cases, you'll get a reading. And that's why I need to talk to Magnus about his, because he had so many court cards in there. And I could not be sure if they were principals or people.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's clear. Sometimes in a reading, you look at a card. Okay. It's like, for instance, the Page of Cups and the Page of Death.
Uh-huh.
Those are principles. Those are not people.
Right.
Okay. How do I know? Because they look flat, not alive.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked at the King of Swords at first, I had no clue. I said, what is that? But it looked alive. I said, who is that? So I'm like, yeah, that looks like me to me.
Okay.
So that's what happens. That's why we key our cards, because they can take on all different aspects of meaning according to what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's through practice that you begin to be able to perceive, is it principle or is it a person?
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
Yep. Jennifer, how did this work for you?
I don't know. Wow. Okay.
You don't know?
I can follow it some, but it seems awful amazing.
Well, it is amazing, but doesn't... I'm what? Oh, you don't have the sheets. We need to get them to you. So that's why it's harder for you, because you're not looking at it.
I also need a whole printout of Class 22, because some of the pages repeated. Like I have two 31s and 33s instead of a 32 in there.
Okay.
Thanks.
Just in my talking through it, could you sort of relate to what it was about and all?
Yeah.
Magnus, how about you?
It's very interesting. I know with time, a lot more was thinking and, working easily.
Sure.
Call on what to. It's interesting. While you were going on, sometime I was like, how did they sit down to people or, whatever, get down to get to this solution, the reverse and all the rest of them. Because you go through them, you make you write them out, you can really deduce what the whole cult's all about, you know, depending on what you are working on, either yourself or somebody else, you can really know what the story is, you know, all about, or what the answer.
Yeah, and it's, like I say, it's fine to do a reading for another person, particularly someone you know. That's always helpful. And to lay out the reading and then sit there with the candles lit and talk to the person about it. Say, you know, are you feeling like you're moving away from knowing exactly what your path was, particularly in regards to the whole viewpoint of world affairs or a bigger picture than just like your personal job or something. You know, I mean, and then let them talk a little bit and see, does that kind of tie into what the cards are telling you?
Yes.
Right. And that's something we didn't really get to do here.
No, but some. I mean, I asked you to, you know, give me some feedback on what I was saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, this is not as high as you all may think it is. But it does take doing readings. And, of course, the nice thing is you do the readings, you email them to me, and I'll help you interpret them.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Alan, is it usually harder for people, like when I sit with this and see what comes if I spend more time with it, is it usually harder for us to do ourselves?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking that. Okay.
Yeah, because you don't have any objectivity. You don't.
Right.
It's so much easier to do somebody else.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, I don't like doing readings on myself.
Uh-huh.
I do them, but I don't like, you know, it's like, boring. And you get into all that internal, you know, stuff about it, you know. Well, what does this mean? But, you know, what happens when you do it on somebody else is, sort of lights start going off. Do you know what I mean? Oh, wow, yeah. Particularly if you can find some place to enter. I mean, I'll tell you what, when I saw that Hierophant reverse death, I knew what this reading was about. I knew it right away. Well, I knew it from the Three of Wands world, too. But even before the death card with that Hierophant reverse up there, I said, yeah, I already see that. You know, so I'm a little surprised, say, how strong the outcome is, given what your sort of consideration of the potential outcome might be. That was a little surprising, but gratifying, because it says that, you know, even though you've paid your dues, so to speak, in kind of hacking your way through your life, you do it well.
I'm a good hacker.
You're a good hacker. You can clear those thorn bushes right out of the way.
Okay.
So,
is it ever say it in terms of the number of reverse cards? Is it wise to take an overview of that, or should let that go?
Not really. The only time that comes up, if all the base cards are reversed, that's saying don't do the reading at this time.
Okay.
Or you have the wrong signifier. But generally it means it's not a good time for that reading. Just something in the world, you don't know about it, whatever. Just fold it up. Don't write it down. That's the only time you don't even record a reading. I don't even second card it. If all the base cards in any reading are reversed, that's it. Wipe it. But if a lot of the base cards are reversed, we're going to talk more about this in 2 weeks, but it is not necessarily a bad thing. what it is saying is that the person is really working with an awful lot of obstacles and challenges. And so they might want to look at the hinge factor and back off from it.
Okay.
And you'll know how to do that, because that's pretty easy to find out, too. So practice doing Celtic cross readings, and then you'll develop some courage. And like I say, I'll help you. If you want to email them to me, please put them on the forums so I can quick, and so I can interpret them quickly. Use the forums that we gave you.
Okay.
Yes. They can't email those? Oh. How do they do it then?
They could.
Oh, if you can fax it, that works. Do they know the fax number? Okay, the fax will be out on the chat. If you can't fax, then I guess you have to do it in that way you record it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, cover cross. Oh, and I should mention this if I didn't. The base card always gets written first. You can spell it out, that's fine. King Swords. Then a slash and whatever the second card is. Or like in this reading, the base card, 3 Wands/World. That would be the one position. If I did the ahead as the first one. And a reverse card, don't make a mistake of not mentioning if it's reverse, base card. We use the RX symbol, like Rexall symbol. RX that's also the retrograde symbol in astrology. And it means reverse. So then you'd say, like, Queen Swords, RX, /6 Wands. So the base card always comes first, /2nd card.
Helen, I have a question, please.
Okay.
When you mentioned earlier about storing the deck and that you had to take the card off the top and the card off the bottom?
Yeah, those are those sort of PR cards. One's blank and one's got some printed stuff on it.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, they're just containment cards.
Okay.
They sort of protect your deck.
Okay.
And Jennifer will get you your stuff. And then next week we'll do more Celtic cross readings in class. And hopefully you all will have some readings to discuss, either in class or have sent to me and so forth. And then we'll also have lab, if people want to blab and lab. And so forth. And then we're done.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alan.
Yes, thank you all.
Yes, thanks, Alan.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye, Magnus.
Bye.